Hey, 413 peeps. Just want to take a quick moment of silence for a fallen brother, Ryan Duffy, who passed away on December 27th. We love you, we'll miss you, and fuck cancer.
Everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the 413 podcast. And we have a very special guest for our episode number, I lost count a long time ago, from Tales from the Pits. I'm Abby, joined by my co-host, the only person I've ever met who spent more time in a kitchen than our guest, Jared.
Hello.
The guitarist in Minimal Effort that actually played a chord, Wick.
Good evening.
Speaking of a chord, Andy thinks his chord is a Mercedes.
Yo.
And I'm not saying that our guest is ancient, but he might be as old as Bill because his bedtime is 3:15.
Yo, what's poppin', peeps?
Wow, that was good.
We're talking about a man who went from hoodie to foodie, from dartboard to charcuterie board, someone who loves a Citizen Uzi drive-thru. And he went from Red Sox hat to Red Sox hat. So please welcome to the show.
Wow, quite an introduction, Abby. Thank you so much for kicking us off there.
It was like half the show.
Special night.
Right. I know that was our ninth take of that for the audience listening.
I did way better than Andy does.
Was Bill introduced, though?
He was kind of introduced.
He said, what up on 3:15.
Yeah, that's true. So I want to, real quick, as Abby mentioned, this is a Tales from the Pits. It's like, I don't know, like number 7 or something. We're very excited to have this one going tonight. It's been a little bit since our last one. And I want to go do a quick round the horn. What's everyone's drinking tonight? Andy, I assume tap water in your muzzle by the muzzle
right.
Sheets.
Yep. Tap water.
Okay, got it. That one good. Murph, also that's a high quality H2O.
Yes, this is a Poland Spring.
Oh.
Art H2O.
Holy moly. Holy moland.
Andy wouldn't spend money on that.
Oh, that's a buck 05. No way.
Andy just fills up the Poland Spring bottle with tap water and sends it off.
Pawns it off.
Yep. Jared, are you also on a water kick tonight? Staying hydrated, I like that. Bill, what stupid IPA do you have tonight?
Not an IPA tonight.
What?
Split seasonality. It is a coconut stout. And just like, you know, in the 413... our seasons change throughout the day, so we got a split seasonality.
So you went with a coconut stout in the middle of winter? That was your...
Yeah.
Hey, it's tropical somewhere, all right?
Okay. I mean, it's a winter beer. It's a winter beer.
That tastes like a Mounds bar?
That tastes like a Mounds bar.
Okay.
Which I have been on record of saying I don't like Mounds bars, but... I do like the 10 Ben's beers.
Tastes like a Mounds bar soaked in hops.
not hops. Yeah, it's not an IPA, I swear.
All of this sounds awful. Abby?
I'm making really questionable choices this evening, per the usual. I have a Virgil's vanilla cream soda in honor of our guest, although our guest would have root beer.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
I have a passion iced tea with pomegranate syrup, and I'm also eating a yogurt. So we got it all tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, normally I like to indulge in a seltzer or a Dr. Pepper, but tonight I'm drinking Stowe Cider Safety Meeting, which is a dry hopped hard cider. So this will be a fun one.
Cheers.
Cheers. Indeed. All right. Let's kick it off here. I want to talk about music. I want to talk about the punk scene. Murph, I don't want to say you're the godfather here, but you're probably one of them, at least in a polygamous relationship. Tell us your introduction to the Pittsfield punk scene. Were you first a fan or were you first a band member?
Jeez, that's going way back. Yeah. I would say, well, Bill and I met in sixth grade.
Yeah.
At Herberg. He would just give me random CDs and was just like, dude,
so what class to this. Was he teaching of yours when you met him?
Wow. Nope. We were classmates.
Yeah.
But he would just give me random CDs, mostly, you know. He gave me what, Rancid, Let's Go, the self-titled, the first album there. Dead Kennedys, Fresh Fruit for Rotten Vegetables. Yeah. Gave me that. And then pretty much throughout middle school, Bill would just buy the Nitro Records catalog.
Yeah.
Along with t-shirts of every band on Nitro.
Nothing has changed.
So that was Bill's wardrobe. That and football jerseys from Champion Outlet.
Quick question. So when did Bill start wearing three t-shirts at a time? Was it in middle school or was that more of like a high school transition?
It was middle school.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was middle school. And with the jerseys, it was four, so.
Yeah. Well, luckily the jerseys were vented, so he didn't overheat.
Well, to be fair, the reason he wears three t-shirts is because he has very protruding nipples. He has to. Jesus. I think there's eight of them too.
Like a cow.
Oh, that's why I like those stouts. Okay, so Bill was a little bit of your like Pied Piper coming in to listening to punk music.
Yeah, and then he would mention like local bands here and there, and you know, nothing that I ever heard or listened to at the time. He'd talk about shows here and there. I remember him talking about Illinois Jacket playing on the steps of City Hall.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think the very first show I went to was like a Battle of the Bands in like ninth grade at PHS.
Yeah. Was that ninth or 10th grade?
It was either ninth or 10th.
Because that was the first time I met Sean there, because I was at Taconic at the time and you were at PHS.
Yeah,
it dropped off at PHS, so we'd hang out like after school and go down to Elm Street.
Because
I think Extricate? Oh my god, I can't even say the name. Tim Esplade. They had this like open mic thing, and they're just like, just start singing something. I'm like, okay. So imagine maybe it was ninth grade.
Yeah,
it was early.
It was, I want to say it could have been also to the Pentalunatics first show.
Yes.
This is good because we've talked about this specific show on the podcast before, probably two times.
Okay.
So this is good that we're putting together another vantage point here.
Because Joel was playing
And somehow you still decided to keep listening to punk music after that show?
I was like, it could get better.
You're dedicated.
Yeah, and still hanging out with me. I appreciate that, Mike.
Yeah.
All right, so music felt you found your genre potentially, you found your local scene. When did you pick up your first instrument and what was that?
Dear God, I want to say it was a 0 milligrams practice.
Yeah.
Because I was hanging out with those guys.
Shout out to Dan.
Introduced to Nick M.
Yeah.
Or no, I was in a few classes with Nick M. He lived around the corner from me. We would hang out. He introduced me to Brendan R.
Mm.
Then we started hanging out. And then people just started buying instruments.
Yeah.
That introduced me to Danny A.
Yeah.
Shout out.
And then they formed a band. They formed 0 milligrams. Started hanging out with them when they would have band practice after school. And then for some reason, like Dan couldn't make it one day. And they were like, hey, why don't you play bass? So I was like, practice fill-in for them. I didn't have an instrument myself. I used Dan's that was left at Brendan's house. And then... I
learned a lot of Sublime songs.
No, I don't like Sublime. Oh, no. That's
shots fired.
Okay, podcast over. Just kidding.
Yeah. You don't say that in front of Brendan R.
Yeah. Shout out to Brendan.
But yeah, so then like within a year, I bought a bass, and then Brendan S. ended up buying a drum kit. And then we were hanging out with, I think, Joe one night on Elm Street. He wanted to sing in a band. And then that's how the early version of Dartboard started.
Was it just a three-piece to begin with and you were still in search of a guitar player? Or
actually, no, because I remember Joe saying one night that Sean D wanted to play guitar in a band. He played drums in every band he was ever in. So
yeah. Right, probably at that point was already People's Choice and Southdown.
I don't know if People's Choice was a band at that point, but Southdown definitely was.
Got it. So this is probably what, like 99? Does that sound fair?
98, 99, I would say. 99. Probably junior, senior year, yeah.
Okay, yep.
Quick question. Did you count Star Crunch Apocalypse in this? Or excuse me, DKC.
Ooh. Yeah, that was
coming Jeff S's attic, right?
Yeah. Shout out to so that was probably before Dartboard.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we count. this was a fever dream.
Emphasis on fever.
Yeah.
Something's got to kill that infection. Yeah. Okay, this is good. This helps. At the time, obviously, Joe had been in bands. He was in Pan Lunatics. I think. Talking to him, that was his first band. And he wanted to sing. Is bass like the instrument that you like dreamed of that you wanted to play, or was that just like what you got thrown into?
I kind of looked at it as, okay, it's four strings as opposed to six, you know. Sure. It's less, probably like the quickest to learn. That's how I kind of looked at it.
Yeah. Do you remember what your first bass was?
It was a Squire P bass special.
Ooh.
So I had the jazz pickup and also the P bass pickup.
Nice. So you get that. That's how that classic Dartboard tone was developed.
Well, I had that for probably 10 months and then I bought a Fender jazz bass.
Okay. Got it. That was really the sound then. All right.
So yeah,
that was just the intro. Good. Good. Do you remember playing your first show, like in front of more people than like three? Mm-hmm. Any recollection of what that felt like?
That was very intimidating. So it was, we weren't on the bill to begin with. We went to Hampshire College for a show. I remember Last in Line played.
Nice.
I think the Commonwealth from Maine was supposed to play, but it was in the middle of a blizzard. So we took Route 9, took us like 2 hours to get there. We get there, there was probably 15 to 20 people there. And if you guys know Brendan S., he's very good at talking. So we get to the show. I think they like cut it down from like $5 to like $3 because certain bands couldn't make it from like Boston. And obviously the Commonwealth couldn't make it from Maine. But Brendan gets talking with the kid that put the show on and said, oh, hey, by the way, we're a band, the four of us. And can we play? And that turned into a, yeah, sure.
Oh, wow.
So I'm pretty sure, I think we ended up opening up the show using Last in Line's equipment, which, you know.
Yeah, so it's not even your own bass.
Nope.
Oh, nope.
You know, it's not my 25-watt practice amp either.
Oh, no.
Oh, when you can feel yourself playing instead of just hearing it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, we used all their equipment, and then it was kind of wild.
Awesome.
Do you remember how many songs you played? Was it like a shorty, like a couple songs or like a full set?
No, we probably played six or seven.
Wow.
And also too is Joe's very first show of being a frontman.
Oh, man.
And I remember he just faced the drum set the whole time. Yep. And I remember in between one of the songs, I think Sean D had to like tune or something, but there's a little lull between some of the songs, and someone from the back of the crowd yelled, "Hey, nice ass." and you guys all know Joe. So Joe turned beet red, couldn't talk for like 2 minutes after that.
Shout out to Joe's ass.
He was just turned on. He's like, wow.
Yeah, he didn't know what to do.
Call from the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're at a college campus. Like, you know, it's a blizzard. We're not going home that night.
I didn't think you were going to be playing that night.
Yeah, hey, sailor.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. I recall, I mean, obviously I saw Dartboard plenty of times, but I think the time that I remember Joe actually turning around and facing the crowd for almost the whole show was actually at the Midtown Mall in New Lebanon. There was a show with a couple like weird hardcore bands. And I think People's Choice also played the show.
Yep.
And I just remember like Joe just turning around and facing the crowd and at the weirdest show I think I remember being at.
Yeah, we played there a handful of times. I remember they allowed smoking inside there.
Yep. It was like a weekend flea marketplace, right? Like,
just a wide open space with like,
huge cement floors. Like,
yeah, probably like a extension cord running to the business next door that everyone plugged into the surge protector on.
Cigarette butts everywhere.
I do vaguely remember, it might have been Joe or someone else who was doing the mic check at the beginning. It was doing mic check suck as a joke, I think. So just throwing it out there. Mic check suck. Yeah. If anyone knows that reference. Cool. Okay. Great to hear the intro story of, and do you feel like that was a turning point of like, I want to do this all the time now, or was it something that you're like, wow, we sucked. I never want to play again.
Well, it was funny playing at that volume too.
Sure. Sure.
I think they had somewhat of a decent sound system set up.
The room's finally, big. It sounds good.
Yeah. Like finally hearing like Joe through like a monitor and, you know,
sure,
us playing, you know, a little bit louder than Brennan's drums was kind of interesting.
Definitely hearing more mistakes that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I want to fast forward to one of the early shows that I remember going to, which was Girls Club show. I think it was 2000 and Dartboard played. I think it was still, I don't think it was the first time I saw Dartboard, but it was like one of the first times, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I have the VHS tape of it, and I think I actually uploaded it to YouTube, but I want to ask you about a moment and see if you recall, because it gets cut out on the VHS tape. But you guys are about to start playing, and you're standing on a very tall speaker cabinet.
Yeah.
And then there's a glitch in the tape, and then you're on the ground. Not like falling on the ground, but you're down off the speaker. Did you break anything when you jumped off of this thing?
No.
Was there any damage?
That was pre-planned.
Yeah.
Because I used Joe's speaker cabinet, Joe's head and speaker cabinet at the time. I purposely left his head off this cabinet so I can get up there.
Yeah.
There is a picture mid-jump.
Oh, okay. All right, well, someone's got to find this picture so that we can post it.
It's around somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, you did a lot of jumps. Like, that's why I was like, this sounds like something you did, like, at shows. I remember at Youth Fest, there was also a pretty big leap, and I was like, yo.
Yeah. I'm always under the impression of, you know, you go to see a band, you want at least the band members to be into their own stuff, having fun. You know, I've seen bands where dudes are just standing around, and you're just kind of like, hey, if you're bored, I'm bored.
Same, matching energy, yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, you guys always had energy, which was...
Bill, energy, it doesn't count as energy just because you're jingling.
I wasn't talking about me.
The body stops and the bells keep jingling. But no, yeah, I think that's an important part is that like when you can play a show and you're playing it as if you're playing it for each other and you're into it, then like the crowd will receive that and it'll be a better performance, better engagement. So yeah, agreed. I think you have to like put on a little bit of a show, especially if you're a newer band or like you're playing mm-hmm. with 10 other bands. Like how do you stand out? Well, remember the band where the kid jumped off the speaker? Yeah, they sucked. They sucked, but that speaker jump was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's buy their tape. The red one or the green one. I don't know which one. I don't know which one was out at the time.
Yeah, I forgot which one was the first one.
I think red was the first one and green was the one that had the more tracks on it.
Okay.
I think if I'm remembering that correctly, there was also, I think, a tape that would have come out that would have been a blue tape.
Oh,
I actually have the 4-track tape for it. I think Joe gave it to me a while ago. I was like, hey, maybe you can do something with this at some point. And I didn't, but it does exist.
Was that the one we recorded with Dan in like East Hampton, our last recording?
No, that's like the CD, right? You guys put out a CD.
Actually, no, we recorded it, but we never put it out.
I just called it the Dartboard CD because I had a copy of it, but it was like, trying to think of what songs were on it. Had 17 seconds. I can't remember the names, but I have it. I actually have it on my computer. I'll drop some clips in this episode. Nice to hear, because I think even after hearing the tapes on like a 4-track recording and like seeing you guys live a million times, you never got like the best sound to hear the whole band like the way that it was intended.
Most of our recordings were done on Victor J's. He had like an audio recorder,
the mini disc player.
Yes. Somehow someone was like, hey, it mixes everything so you could hear everything. So just put this in the middle of the room and hit record and play.
Right on.
I recall that being the recording mechanism for Citizen Uzi Drive-By, but I thought Dartboard was on like 4-tracks, but I could be wrong.
You know what? Actually, Dartboard recorded at St. Rose.
St. Rose, okay. Yep.
That's
the CD or whatever.
Yeah.
It's got sound clips from Wayne's World on it and stuff. I don't know why I'm blanking on the songs right now, but
yeah, I think that was
okay. So recording wise, do you remember? So like that session with Eric T kind of going into like what feels like more formal studio. Did you guys play that live or did you guys have that like track by track?
No, we did it track by track. We did scratch tracks with Brandon when he did the drums.
Yep.
And then we just went through and did it track by track after.
Was that intimidating?
It was. Yeah. Yeah. It was really different, especially when it's like, all right, hey, you're up, here, put these headphones in. All right. Now you're just in a room playing. Yep. And it's the first time I ever played through headphones.
Mm.
And then, they hit play in the studio and then you start hearing, drums coming through and guitar coming through and
just kind of lock in at some point.
A few takes, but
yeah, I mean, to be expected. It's interesting because you start, when you're recording in a studio, having monitoring where you're actually hearing what you're doing a little bit more than just sort of like playing along with it. It's like
oh yeah,
I can hear more of like the clankiness of my string and I have to like do this or whatever. So yeah,
you get a little vibration if you're not on a note clearly. And
yep, I like it. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So Dartboard, I don't want to say like fizzled out, but for some reason there was a name change and potentially a little bit of a style change going into Citizen Uzi Drive-By. Any story behind that?
It was just when we came up with the name, it was like we were just hanging out. One day we had a few songs written and somehow we figured we needed a name, and in Brendan's basement, there was a dartboard on the wall. And Brendan just goes, I don't know, let's just call ourselves Dartboard or something. And no one opposed that. So probably like 2 weeks later, when we came back to the whole name thing, we just were like, let's just be Dartboard.
Sure.
Hell yeah.
A gap filler, essentially.
For a few years.
Yep.
Multiple shows and two tapes.
Okay. No, that's good. And maybe a t-shirt here or there.
Yeah. Hand-drawn hoodie.
Yeah.
I know I wore that. I got in trouble for it. Okay. So we moved to Citizen Uzi Drive-By.
Yeah.
Is there like a difference in terms of people knocking at the door, ringing the phones to like play shows in other areas? And the reason I ask is like, sometimes you can build your brand a bit, like Dartboard as a name, and people are like, oh, like, we know that band, let's get them. And you change your band name and either people don't know who you are, or they look at your band name now and they go, actually, this sounds more badass than Dartboard. Like, this band is going to get, is there any changes there, or felt like it was just kind of the same old rigmarole?
I mean, we played Westfield a lot, Springfield a handful of times as Dartboard. Played in Maine one time as Dartboard. And then, you know, once we did the name change, I don't think it really changed at all, you know, based on like exposure. You know, we're playing with the same bands after that. And
do you know where the band name came from?
Sister Who's Your Rabbi?
Yeah.
That was a joke by me at the time.
Oh, okay.
People's AOL profiles, they would list, you know, 35 bands.
Yes.
And I was just like, man, I go, I should just make up a band name, throw it in there, and then see if that like spreads, if other people like put it in there.
I got
in there, in their bios.
Catch the posers. I got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a poser trap.
Yeah. I think Bill was the second person to put it in his profile.
Bill still has it in there. Bill has a hoodie right now, I think.
Bill's got the neck tat.
Bill's like, Murph, I'm getting a little nervous about this band. I can't find their merch online.
Yeah. Yeah. So eventually it got to the point where, I don't know, if people got sick of the band, you know, guys in the band got sick of the name, and because we never settled on like a final name. And then it just kind of like merged into CUD.
Hell yeah.
And there was a kind of a gap between CUD before 315 started. Am I correct on that?
Three months.
3 months. Okay, not a big gap.
I mean, are you serious? That blows my mind.
Yeah.
So we played Youth Fest in September of 01.
Hell yeah.
And then
we played that one.
Yeah, you guys were there.
Yeah.
So we played that, and then we just kind of like fizzled out, didn't practice. Sean was in school at the time at UMass. And then over that winter time, it was like December-ish of 01. Brendan bought a guitar. He wanted to start a band playing guitar and got a hold of me and was like, hey, I was talking with Sean's brother, Derek, and, you know, he's down for playing drums in a band with us. So we kind of got together, wrote a few tunes, but we we look around the room and decided that the three of us couldn't sing and play at the same time. So we were, you know, looking for a singer. And then Joe actually practiced, I think, two practices playing like second guitar with us.
Really?
And then it kind of like just folded into Joe just, hey, just sing.
Hell yeah.
Was the original 315 name Models Inc.? I'm remembering that as being thrown around a little bit.
Yeah, we were going to go for it. And then it's funny, it's like word started to spread that, hey, you know, we're doing a band and this is what we're going to be called. And then we were at a show one day. And then probably like a flywheel show or in Westfield or something. And there was a flyers set up for a show that was happening in the near future there. And there was a band on the bill called Models Inc. out of Worcester.
Oh.
So we were like, okay, we're too close. Like,
yeah,
you know, we weren't really like, hey, you know, we weren't really all stoked on the name either. Again, sure. It was new. We were new. So, yeah. Originally, we were going to be Models Inc., and then the Worcester band kind of played a show first. So
then how did you guys come up with 315 then?
We were at a practice, and Joe was like, hey, I kind of like might have a band name for us, like a legit band name. And I remember Derek verbally said out loud, anything but numbers. I can't be in a band where it's just numbers. Joe legit like shuts down and is kind of like, oh, okay. And then he says, yeah, I was thinking, you know, 315. And of course, you know, I think he's joking. Yeah. I think he's joking.
What the fuck with Derek?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was just messing with Derek. I don't know if Brendan was in the room at the time or whatever, but, you know, Derek was kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like, of course it's going to be like numbers. And then I'm like, okay, Joe, so like, what do you think? And he goes, no, like legit, like 315.
Shout out to Derek.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did Derek have against numbers? He's like, ah, I hate him.
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
It's a very ska thing to do, I think. He was trying to get he's trying to break the ska, like,
okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he was trying to get out of, like, the just that whole vibe and out of Skip George. And
You think Skip George is a number?
Well, they could have been. They were 314, actually. That was their original band name.
I just skipped a number and it's 315.
Yep. Okay, good to know the little bit of the history there. And so when did the process of adding a second guitarist happen? Was that during a recording session? Was that just like looking to do something different with the sound? Or was that just like mic in between bands? And like, how did that all go down?
That was, so he recorded us, our first demo was as a four piece.
Yep.
You know, he was buying better recording equipment at the time, kind of playing around with it. He recorded us as a four piece, came up pretty good. And then I think Joe dropped it one day at a practice, was like, hey, talking with Mike, he kind of wants to be in a hardcore band. He was starting to listen to more hardcore music, kind of like out of Boston. And he kind of wanted to be in a band like that and kind of felt, we could do that for him. So he jumped in on second guitar. And yeah, that's it.
That was just the history. Because he had, I think at that point, Southdown was fizzling out, but he was in the ending.
The ending came after he was in 315.
A little after, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we were still playing as 315 and then the ending started because he wanted, I think, get back in the singing.
Or maybe there's Elta Addison. I know that was before the ending. I guess I'm trying to think of when what the dates were, but I'm vaguely remembering it being like 02, 03 is probably like the first incarnation of that. When you guys did the first 315 demo, was that at Mike's parents' basement or was that?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. That's where we recorded it.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. That's where we did our minimal effort EP for Shoot the Moon. And I think the ending recorded their first demo that same month and I think released it because I think Mike just used my drum set because it was like I was already set up. So they just recorded the whole thing. So super handy. Okay. So 315 was the first band that you were in that actually toured. Can you talk a little bit about tour, your experiences, any wild stories?
That was probably the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Right on.
Yeah. So that came about. We were playing, a lot of local shows. I don't even know if we even played in New York at that time, but, mostly Western Mass, Pittsfield here and there. Brendan, for a very short time, played in a band out of Albany called End of a Year. Still was in contact with those guys after he left the band. And he kind of mentioned it. It was going into the summer of 04. So it was probably like, late winter, early spring, 2004, he kind of threw the idea around of doing a tour. So, we're all like, fuck yeah, let's do this.
Hell yeah.
And so he got together with the guys from End of a Year. They kind of, because they wanted to do a tour as well in the summertime. So Brendan and those guys kind of like pieced together, kind of like a route they wanted to play, got in contact with whoever they could, probably through Book Your Own Fucking Life. And we ended up playing probably like 7 or 8 shows on that tour.
What was the wildest city you went to, or like the one that like you remember? Like
Lenox, probably
the most.
Source
of the Nile.
It started off in Saratoga Springs, New York.
Nice.
That was a decently attended show.
With End of the Year, that makes sense. Yeah.
Them being the local guys, I think that brought out a decent crowd. Our next show is at CBGB's Lounge in New York. So it was my first time going to New York City. We drove down after the Saratoga show, parked, slept in a rest stop outside the city, went into the city in the morning, bopped around the city for a little bit, played the show. Then we went down to the Jersey Shore, slept on some side street in front of the beach, hung out at the beach all that day.
That's up. This is 04, right? So 04. Like
04. Yep. Yeah.
There's no iPhones. There's no like.
No. We had
no Google Maps or anything.
We had MapQuest directions printed out.
Oh.
And we had a book called The Binder, and like it was very strict. Like we rented a Brendan bought a van.
Oh wow.
Just before the tour, that was great. Oh, we rented a U-Haul trailer. So really the big three rules were don't lose the keys to the van, don't lose the keys to the lock on the U-Haul trailer, and don't lose the MapQuest direction binder.
Oh no.
Could have bought a Tom Tom probably at that point.
Not us, no.
So half the budget.
Yeah, like Derek just graduated high school, like
and his little budget in a field somewhere.
He could have still been in high school.
Oh wow.
I don't know.
Yeah, 04.
Right? Wasn't he just out at 04?
I think he just graduated.
Yeah.
And, so after that, our next show was in Hereford, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
Very, very tiny town. We played at this guy's, Chris's house. He played drums in the Better Life Typecast.
Oh, cool.
Like, great dudes. Like, it was 4th of July. He had, a cookout, party there. I don't know. I think he just took all the furniture out of his living room. That's where we played. But he also recorded bands too. He had a nice studio set up down in his basement. Then after that, we went to Richmond.
Yes.
So we were supposed to play at, I forgot the name of the club, Black Cats or something Cat. It's in downtown Richmond. On the way there, we got hit with a huge storm. We were on 95. Huge storm came through. So we got to the venue. And that whole block in Richmond had no power.
Oh, wow.
So we hung out there for a little bit. The kid that put the show on, I think it was Brandon from Wild Owls.
Yeah.
Yes. He's kind of like, hey, no idea when the power's coming back. So the show's canceled. And he's like, you guys want to crash at our place tonight? Because we're also playing a show the next day too, a house show in Richmond.
Right on.
So we get to their apartment. I think he lived with Tyler from Wild Owls and I think another dude from the band as well. So we get to their place. We're kind of hanging out. We ended up playing us and End of a Year ended up playing kickball against the Richmond local scene. And I remember we absolutely crushed them. We went to a park.
4-1-3.
Yeah, exactly. Like 4-1-3 and 5-1-8, like represented in sports.
love it.
So we're walking back to these guys' apartment. We hear people tuning guitars and playing music. So we're like, man, what's so someone practicing around the corner? And Brandon's like, oh, dude, it's this dude Rusty. He has shows at his house sometimes. So of course we make our way over there. We send Brendan in first, and he's got the gift of gab. And he comes out and goes, hey, I'm going to get the van. He said we could play next.
Oh shit.
So we play in this dude's basement. The only band I can remember playing was a band from Long Island, New York called Patent Pending. They were on a Warp. They played the local Warp Tour show that year too.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I think they ended up being on somewhat decent label. They were a pretty good pop punk band, really nice dudes. So we ended up jumping on the basement show there. And this dude, Rusty, kind of reminded me of Bill. There's no way this dude even heard of us before. But he was up front skanking, pumping his fist. He had dreads.
Yo!
This dude was into us.
Brother?
Yeah. Yep. So, so we play that show. The next day we play the house show with Wow Owls, End of a Year. I think one other local band. Let's see. So then after Richmond, we parted ways with, End of a Year.
Is that the infamous 315 Ain't Nothing to Fuck With in Richmond?
Yes. That was Brandon from Wild Owls.
Right on.
At some point we're at their apartment and they brought up this, I forgot the name of the band. It was a bigger hardcore band. Mm-hmm. The singer for the band slaps this dude, knocks him out. And then someone yells out in the background, the band name and Ain't Nothing to Fuck With. So after the house show in Richmond, we're hanging out, you know, after the house, you know, everyone's hanging out, you know, shooting the shit, talking. And Brandon from Wild started yelling 315 ain't nothing to fuck with. So that became like the catchphrase. Like we came back from that tour and started like yelling it out at random times. You know, I'm on the Westfield State campus. I hear from across the campus. Yeah. That was actually Bill. I don't think he saw me on campus. I think he just yelled it out randomly.
So that's your bare bones. That's what.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So after the Richmond stuff, we played Huntington, West Virginia.
Yes.
We played in a massive warehouse. It's middle of summer. It is like 105 degrees inside the warehouse. Like this thing was like massive, just metal shed warehouse. We played maybe to 10 kids.
Not the Marshall football team or?
No.
Damn.
No. So then after that, was my 22nd birthday.
Awesome.
And
so where did you celebrate that at?
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Nice. Yeah, go blue.
So we had the day off, and then the very next day was Minneapolis, show in Minneapolis.
Yes.
So actually, no, I think we played West Virginia, and then we played Detroit.
Oh, wow.
We played a show in Detroit. And then after that, the very next day was my birthday. We ended up going to Ann Arbor.
Sir.
And we also ended up going to some lake in the middle of Michigan.
Oh.
I don't remember the name. I dubbed it Lake Shithole. It was just people.
Was it a great lake?
No. It was filthy.
It was mid.
Yeah, it was very. It was filthy.
It was Lake Inferior. Is that?
Yeah. Like I've never seen so many cut off jean shorts and like homemade Pabst Blue Ribbon tattoos.
Wait,
have you never been to Anoda?
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure that you're describing Biscayne.
It's not even Silver Lake.
I know, right? Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute. Was my dad at this show?
Or your brother.
Or my brother.
I remember going into the bathroom there, and
oh no,
the only stall that was open looked like someone started throwing up and did a 360.
Oh. Like Exorcist style.
Yeah. Like different colors, like the smell, the look, like it was a bad scene.
X Games.
You're like, I remember going into the bathroom, your brother came out and they only threw open.
Definitely Michigan State fans, not Michigan fans there.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely Spartans.
Yeah.
That tracks.
And then after that was the Minneapolis show, which was this dude, he wanted to put on shows. His parents like built an extension on his house. Like it was a massive garage, but had a stage, professional sound booth, lights. Like we played that show with Comeback Kid and a couple other bands. Champion was supposed to play, but their van broke down on the way.
That must have been awesome playing with Comeback Kid.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah. That was probably the most well-attended show that we had that tour. Right. And then it's a 24-hour drive from Minneapolis back to Pittsfield.
Wow. You guys drove straight through?
Yep.
No shows on the way back?
Nope. That's how it played out.
They didn't have the MapQuest directions. They were out.
Yeah, stick to the binder.
We couldn't adjust.
Like, everyone has to stick their head out the window and listen if they hear music on the highway. Oh,
yeah.
Get off this exit. There's a house. Yeah. House having band practice.
And I find a library to log into your MySpace.
315 ain't nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, so that was the 04 tour. That was a lot of fun. Definitely got the bug from that. Definitely had to, do another one after that.
Yep. So fast forwarding a little bit, 315 played for how many years? Like, are we talking?
We started practicing in December of 01, and then we started playing shows in 02, like early spring of 02. And then our last show was August of 06.
Wow.
Okay. Then a couple of reunion shows.
Yeah, two. I think 09 and then 2012.
What are the thoughts? You think we're due for another reunion show?
Yeah.
I mean, there's talk about it. you know, the last time we were all in a room, or most of us were in a room together, it kind of got brought up, and then it was kind of like, yeah, I'm down if you're down.
Right. I hear there's a postal vehicle that you can hear somebody rolling down the window saying 315 ain't nothing to fuck with. So
I've heard that.
The demand is out there.
It was somewhere in Minnesota, though, we're pretty sure. By a pretty crappy lake.
Super mid lake. Super mid
lake. Vomit hasn't been cleaned up since 04.
I can also tell you that you played in South Bass Island, Ohio.
Boo.
I never remember playing Ohio.
I have a postcard from you on July 10th, 2004.
There may also be Bismarck, North Dakota.
Fargo. We played Fargo.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's 05.
That's a, oh shit. Yeah.
Virginia?
Yeah, we played Virginia.
Another Virginia? If I dug deeper, I could find more, but
that's what she said.
I'm lazy.
Okay. And then after 315, what were you doing?
I joined a band called Help in Hand.
Oh, yeah.
It was already an established band. It was a college friend of Brendan's, John G. Their drummer wasn't playing drums for them anymore. So, they asked Brendan to play, and then their bass player wasn't playing bass for them anymore. So Brendan asked me to play. We did one recording with Mike, played a few shows in Western Mass, and then we did like a mini tour.
Oh, wow.
Like we played New York City, we played a house in New Jersey, and then maybe like the DC area.
Oh, wow.
Pennsylvania. We played at least another show and then came back and played like a Western Mass show.
And that was like what, like posse hardcore?
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, okay. Very, very posse.
Okay.
I vaguely remember seeing and hearing the band on MySpace. So that's my recollection.
We were a MySpace band. We had some merch. We had some.
I don't think you had merch. I never saw Bill wear it.
No, we did. Because so we did a silk screen, or we did a design.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at it. I'm like, man, I go, because I had like the squiggly line underneath, like just the band name. So I'm like, man, it looks like Charlie Brown's shirt. So I throw the idea out that the design should go around the whole shirt.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how we ended up screening the shirts. And so it was a front and back design.
How did I never buy this shirt? What?
Yeah.
Good grief.
So let me ask you something.
Or get the tattoo.
There were rumors from another guest we had that said he has started a band with you called Minimal Effort. Now, was there any truth to those rumors?
Yes. I think the original guitarist or one of the original guitarists for Minimal Effort.
So how long did that last?
That was my time in Minimal Effort was very, very short.
It was minimal.
Yes. it was Minimal Effort on my end. that's not where they came up the name though. The band was named before there was even a band.
Yeah.
But I survived a few practices and then it was kind of like you know, I don't really want to play pop punk as a guitarist. So
rude.
the singer was contemplating doing a Britney Spears cover.
Oh no!
Which one?
All of them.
So it's safe to say you felt that, you know, the band was not going anywhere. So
wow!
No. Pun. Not like that, but they weren't going anywhere with me playing guitar. I can tell you that. And I think
on that Jetta.
I think Brandon Kay had. I think I practiced with him once or twice.
Oh, awesome.
And then it was just like, hey, you should just have Brandon play guitar.
You used him. He was the buffer.
Yes.
Like, he's got this. Come on.
I tagged him in and split.
Makes sense. But then you ended up in a pop punk band later on.
So. I did. With the same singer.
Did you cover any Britney Spears songs?
We did covers. Like to know? We did an LFO cover.
Yep. Yeah.
LFO. We did a Blues Traveler cover.
Yeah.
We did two Blink-182 covers.
Yep.
I mean, that's a given.
I think that's it. I think we played a bunch of random shit every practice, but
yeah.
I think in terms of what we actually played at a show,
yeah, that was fun.
It's good.
That was fun.
It was like, that was Just Say So. So probably like 2010 was the start of that.
And then 09, I think 2010.
Yeah. Something around there. And then I think the last show was 2013. We played at Chameleons.
Oh, yeah. How many burritos were eaten during the duration of that band?
Every practice.
Every practice was burritos and Harold's until, yeah. Well, it was until we started practicing at Matt's house. And then since we were further away, it was going to the Bueno in Springfield.
Yep.
Oh.
But there was no ice cream near there.
No. And we had a setup at my house, though.
Yes. And I don't.
So did your work schedule can kind of conflict with your band schedule? Because I know you worked a lot on the weekends.
Yeah. But it was my work was always very lenient, kind of, because, you know, that's the thing, too. I worked, you know, during 315, I was working from, you know, Thursday to Sunday from 3 to midnight most nights. But I would just tell them, like, you know, 2 weeks in advance, hey, I need this Friday off, this Saturday off, or hey, I need 2.5 weeks off because I'm going away.
I got to go to a basement to play a show.
Sorry, I'll be in Seattle that night.
You're like, listen, I normally make pizzas in this basement, but I need to play in a basement show. So
yeah, sometimes I wrap the pepperoni around the pizza. It's just nice. All right, so now that we've talked a little bit about the band history, Abby's got some questions for you that we're dying to know.
Right. I
no,
do.
Abby, you don't.
I absolutely
yes.
have a lot of questions for you. Oh, I know. One of my favorite questions I want to ask you. Okay. You have a day in the Berkshires.
Mm.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What three spots are you picking?
Ooh.
That's
breakfast. Can't cross state lines.
Breakfast is Haven.
Okay.
Lunch, maybe GB Eats.
Okay. Great Barrington. Wow. Okay.
Or Hot Dog Ranch in Pittsfield.
Okay.
That felt better.
Dinner. Am I getting dessert there or is dessert at another place?
No, you gotta get dessert.
You can have dessert elsewhere if you'd like.
Yeah, you can totally have dessert elsewhere.
Oh,
it's okay. Him.
Yeah.
Okay. He always takes us somewhere else for dessert.
Dessert's the bonus. Okay, dinner. Go ahead.
Okay. Fuck. Jeez, this one's tough.
Yeah.
Arguing a lot of quesadillas.
Ooh, what about Chico's in Great Barrington? Mexican.
Heck yeah.
And where's this dessert coming from?
Number 10, also in Great Barrington.
Oh, really?
Damn, Great Barrington's sweeping out here.
Damn. You bougie motherfucker.
I know, right? Jeez, what, a little heroin addict walking by on the side, too?
What the fuck?
We haven't had one of those in a while.
Wait, is Bistro Box open or are they closed?
Oh, they can be open.
Yeah, and it's pretty much, you know.
That's in between lunch and dinner.
Jesus, you're like a hobbit over here. You're like, oh, I got first breakfast, got to have second breakfast, third.
Yeah, you just hibernate in the wintertime.
Okay.
Yeah, I was surprised. No Frankie's.
Oh, Frankie's is good too.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't say a week though. We gave him a day. Like,
I mean, I was pressed.
Yeah, that's true. That's yeah. That was a tough question.
We weren't like, your kitchen's broken for a month. Where do you eat every day?
Betty's Pizza and SoCo Creamery Romance.
Yeah, that's what it would be.
What's your favorite item on the Highlands menu? No, don't actually answer that question.
Yeah,
are you waiting for an answer?
For anybody?
No.
I think originally we were going to give you a series of items and you would tell us where the best place to get that item. And then it just became like, where's the best place to get breakfast, lunch, dinner kind of thing.
Oh. Okay.
But then it kind of does both.
So I always like to ask a question.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
I told you about it a little bit earlier.
This was my, this is where I go get a drink, right?
That's right. But so if you could book any show with any four bands, right? And you have to pick, obviously, what band you would be in to play there as well. What venue locally would you pick and what bands? And what band would you be in?
Dear God.
A lot of parts to that question. You want me to write it down for you?
Yeah. So first one, where's the venue? Where do you want to play in Pittsfield?
Like currently or?
Anywhere from the past, the places you've played, like you can pick anyone.
So probably my favorite local show was at Source of the Nile.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Which band would you be in that's going to play there?
Oh, definitely 315.
Nice. All right. And then like, you know, like 3 to 4 bands you could pick, like any bands to play with. Like
just
be any
4.
I know, but I want to, you know, just in case.
Oh, man. Like local bands or
any bands, any bands. It could be some local bands. It could be bands from way Beethoven, long ago that you heard. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that'd be cool. Jeez. I'd probably have to like do almost like a probably favorite bands that we played with.
Ooh.
So definitely end of a year. Bring them back.
Hell yeah.
I don't think they ever played Pittsfield.
For real?
It's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, you're right.
Did we have places to play at that point? Or was that when everything was shut down? Or
yeah.
Kind of closed everything.
Yeah, the girls club was already done.
Because Arisi's was done.
Yeah, we never played there.
405 or something. Or was
the
that
arena, Arisi's, Busters, they're all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Frank's Basement.
Yeah.
You could have played there.
Still there, yeah, still there.
Actually, we did play there. We played with Robot Has Werewolf Farm.
Oh, wow.
And then probably Bare Bones and...
Yeah. Shout out to Bare Bones.
Whatever
band. All right, so we got one band down, though. So who else you playing with?
Oh,
Andy, calm down.
Yeah. Geez. Time rolling down. We got 20 minutes left. probably bring Wow Owls up. Those dudes were cool.
Yeah. Nice.
Probably Close Call out of Boston. We played with them a handful of times.
Fuck yeah.
It was always a good time. And then I would say Last in Line.
Yeah. All right. Yes. Nice.
Strong lineup, man.
Right. Good show location, too, though. Somewhere in the Nile.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I think we played once there and it was
insane.
We opened up with a Minor Threat cover. We played Filler.
Oh,
and, like everyone in the band was like totally against like opening with a cover. And it was like, dude, it's a Pittsfield show.
Yeah, calm down. Yeah,
like, I know. Come on, guys.
Yeah, let's you know get the blood flowing.
Yeah,
you know? And it's I don't know if you guys know the song, but it starts off with bass and I think bass.
Maybe? Yeah, bass.
And then it all comes in, and then like that place like exploded. Yeah. It was great.
Nice. I mean, I always like to ask too. So obviously you played bass the most. What would be your dream bass? Like when you were a kid, right? Like you're in 315, money's not an object. You can get any bass you want. What bass do you get?
Whew. See there, Rickenbacker or Gibson?
Nice. Ooh, nice.
Go with the Rickenbacker.
Yeah.
They feel nice. They're just nice to play.
Prince joints.
I never owned one, but I had a girlfriend that had one.
Oh, okay.
That's the only reason we were together.
you didn't get that in the breakup?
No, apparently not. Just let me get the neck.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's not even a question really here. We normally would ask where the best pizza is. So why don't we do this instead of asking where the best pizza is? Cause we already know you're going to say East Side. What's the second best pizza in Pittsfield?
In Pittsfield.
Yes. In Pittsfield.
In Pittsfield.
He's going to say Great Barrington. Watch. He's going to say fucking Bob O'Leary's.
No, they're not there anymore. They left.
There we go.
I was going to go with Lanesboro Pizza, but.
Okay.
Maybe like Tyler Street.
Ooh, Tyler Street's dope.
Yeah.
You're wrong,
Tyler Street or Papa Joe's?
Papa Joe's is the correct answer. Thank you.
Papa Joe's is like eating a pillow. It's great.
Yeah. What was Tyler your favorite East Side pizza, though, to eat?
Cheese melt, garlic, pepperoni, sausage.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one. I'm a classic pepperoni guy. I'm like, I don't want to mess with any of the triangles. I'm like, no.
Yep.
Extra pep on there, buddy.
Like, I'm not big on...
I have a secret menu item on the East Side menu that I like, but haven't had it in about 30 years.
Pizza.
Abby, the way you eat pizza, I hope it's nothing messy. He's like Hannibal Lecter. She like peels the cheese off first.
wears it.
Takes that down.
Like, put the sauce in the basket.
Licks the sauce off.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's
Bill, you drop the cheese. Yeah. It's different.
Puts the sauce in the basket or gets the hose.
I've seen Abby eat ice cream with her hand before. So
what?
Like, Jesus. Got it in a cone and like picked it.
Oh. Yep. I mean, all right.
Like a bird. Messed up. So I know you picked the venue Source of the Nile, but like, could you give us your top three Pittsfield venues, like from back in the day, current state, like aside from Source of the Nile? So give us two and three.
Jeez. Girls Club was always fun too.
Yeah.
I mean, you had the stage there, obviously. And for somehow Brendan advertised those shows very well, had, you know, decent lineups, and they were actually pretty well attended, all of them.
Yeah.
Except that one time that was like, it got really hot in the room and then like the moisture came up from the floor.
Oh, just slippery.
It was like a slip and slide because it was, straight tile floor, probably asbestos tile, but.
100%. There's no remediation there.
Yeah. 10 by 10. Yeah.
And maybe Frank's basement. That was fun.
Right on.
But you know, I think there was like a wood stove right in the middle of the basement. There was some obstruction that we couldn't move.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like a wood stove, but yeah, no, that was fun playing there too.
We'll get a picture. We'll find out.
I'm trying to think the last
time. Yeah. We can ask Frank.
Yeah. No one ever says this one, but you guys played a bunch of shows at the arena. Did no one ever like playing at the arena?
The arena was big. And I think what we were playing through at the time, because that was like Dartboard System, Uzi days, like the practice amps we were playing through, it was just, the sound was, it left your amp and then it never came back.
Sure.
Just on like, you couldn't hear anything. There, right? Then did they ever have a stage or anything built up?
Yeah. Well, they built a stage for a one show.
That Skate Fest or something.
Skate Fest thing. It was Southdown and Boxing Water and Drop Faith and a couple other bands played there. But even that was weird because like they didn't mic anything, and the speakers for the vocals were so out in the front that you couldn't actually hear it because they were playing to the people playing indoor hockey on the ground. So like there was nowhere to stand as a fan to watch the bands unless you played it was bizarre.
I remember trying to lift Mike L's 810 amp up onto the stage. It was like, this is coming back down and someone's getting crushed by this. Then when we played, like an indoor soccer match was happening.
Yep.
And like you said, it was right in front of the stage.
So weird place.
Yeah.
Like they could have turned it around or something. I don't know. Laser tag was fun. Yeah. The arena was just a fun spot. So for me, it was like a really smooth transition of like being a kid that was into skateboarding and going to the arena every Friday night to then all of a sudden bands showing up there and being like, oh, cool. I can see like Dartboard and the Damaged every other week. Like that's pretty much what it was.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Southdown, People's Choice, like three or four bands that constantly played there.
Yeah.
Always a good time. So I was like those shows, but yeah, definitely heard like the space was too big for, I think the show. And it was like, there was nothing to hold the sound in. It was very much like you're playing an indoor soccer field.
All the lights were off. You unless someone was 10 feet in front of you, you couldn't see anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild shows there for sure.
Oh yeah. As well as the Erasy show.
True.
Actually, quick question. Do you know who put their boot through a light? We've been trying to figure this mystery out.
Where was that?
The floor.
Who broke the floor at Racy's?
Was it a boot?
There was a floor there.
The light.
There was a dance floor, but I don't know.
That was earlier.
Yeah.
Citizen Uzi didn't play there until
the catch up.
Until the catch-up incident, which was well after the broken floor.
Okay.
They moved us.
I know Brendan was there because Brendan played bass, filled in for Nate for Dead Rats. Like for some reason when we started Bulletproof/Dead Rats, Every time we would have a show in the summer, Nate would be like on vacation. So we had like three different bass players fill in, or maybe it was two. It was Brendan and Kevin H both filled in on bass.
I got a Bulletproof thing that Mike was definitely involved with. So Bulletproof was looking for a singer, and I was over at Mike's on AIM. And you're like, yo, have you heard of this band Bulletproof? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. And he's like, and then you're like, well, I'm talking to Eric right now online. Do you want to go try out for him? I'm like, all right.
Oh, damn.
Is this Piss and Rocks?
Yeah.
All right. Can we take a quick moment to go around and dox everyone's AIM name right now? Can we? I think, let me see if I know these. Bill was like Bill Dangerfield.
No. It was a long one.
All right, go ahead.
A Wasteland Punks with an X, 4i3.
4i3, yep.
Yes.
There it is.
Because Wasteland Punks 413 was someone else already.
And then during the college years with Mike, it was Whip City Punks 4i.
Oh, yep. Okay.
And Abby, yeah. Shout out to my owls.
Abby.
What do you remember me being?
I feel like there was a bunch, so I'm not. This...
Nobody.
Hold on.
Was it Abigail something?
I don't really remember using AIM that much.
So I had Not Abigail, X Saturnine X, XOXO Saturnine.
Oh.
Dear Abby is Me, maybe?
I think the Dear Abby is Me.
We had to change a lot.
Yeah.
It was hard to have. Jared, do you remember? Was one of them like Lost Cost or something?
Yeah.
Was that Lost Cost?
Was that the...
Do you have a North Star one or something?
No. That sounds like it could be a thing. Andy?
I don't remember. I remember AIM, but I like it probably had one name.
I remember Andy's.
Oh, go ahead.
What was it?
Andy 1234.
Oh, you know what? Oh my God, it was. Yes, that was it.
No one else had that.
Andy 1234. Yeah, no, someone had Andy 1. Someone had Andy 1-2. Someone had Andy 1-2-3. And I was Andy 1-2-3-4.
I remember because we trolled all the time. That fucking, I'd be like, yo, let me make 1-1-2-3-4. I'm sorry, Andy. I love you.
No, I forgot all about it. I'm like, I know I had a name, but I'm like, I don't remember it. I didn't change, like, everyone always had those, like a million different ones.
Well, because I think yours was an AOL one.
Oh, yeah.
But so you could also get the...
Oh.
On there, too. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, because people would be like, oh, we got to, like, put instead of a... Like, do a lowercase L instead of a 1, and then I'm going to message Pat, tell him I'm a girl.
Or, I know, like, but mine was always... Mine was always an homage to Sean Pants.
Mm-hmm.
So, because Pez 413...
That's Murph. Why you could never lure guys, you know, thinking that you were a lady, because they were like, no, I know who Whip City Punk 4-1-I-3 is. 4-1-3 is going to be Bill, too.
I know Murph.
Was it like MX7 something? Was that in there?
No.
Okay, go ahead.
I sort of remember that. Well, there was, oh, shit, it's
Murph. Oh, shit, it's Murph. Yep.
Yeah. That was probably the one I used the most.
That's right.
Piss and Rocks was there at some point.
Yeah. That was
not whatchamacallit, your favorite candy bar.
That's a good candy bar. Still holds up.
Yep.
And of course I was Latchkey Kid 13.
That
was
my longest running. That's right.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I my remember yours running. As well.
Yeah. Oh, I should have let you guess. Well, you knew, so we'll never know if you were lying though.
So Latchkey Kid 13, or was it Latchkey Kid 1-2-3-4?
It was I-3. It was M3G.
M3G, yes. God, M3G.
Wait, what was Nick's? Can we dox
Nick? Nick had a million of them. He had so many.
Yeah, Nick always changed his.
His like was different every like. You get a random message, hey, daily.
Who is this, Nick? Which fucking Nick? You can be more specific. It's the most common name in the world.
You know.
Then that one will log off, then another one will message you.
Like, hey, I'm not Nick. I'm a girl.
Why are you signing to three of them with three of them being away? With the same AFI quote. Weird.
Yeah. Oh, some of those away messages.
All right, so Murph, I got to ask. So came up in the Pittsfield punk scene. Is there anything like, what's like your favorite memory other than touring? Cause that was outside of Pittsfield. Was there anything like favorite show memory, favorite band memory, or just like favorite experience being in a band from Pittsfield or playing in the Pittsfield scene? What do you got?
I liked all the tightness. Like, you know, you go to a show around here, you knew probably 90% of the people there, probably 50% of them were in some type of band that either had something out or you saw them at other shows or they were playing the show that, you know, you're at that day. And then the amount that people would just hang out.
Yeah.
Just randomly during the week. And then anytime there was a show, like there was just like a crew hanging out on Elm Street, like immediately after.
So I'm sorry, Mike, I just want to ask, like, cause like literally we've been going down to Elm Street since sixth grade.
Yep.
Like, when do you remember like just like a lot more people just like joining us in the parking lot? Cause we just sit on the stoop for like,
hours,
just talking shit and stuff and just like eating zebra cakes and just having fun. And then all of a sudden more people showed up and it was like, this is awesome. And then we got to play music to all of our friends and stuff and they're creating stuff. I just have such a fondness of just those, especially just like me and you just like hanging out, sitting on a stoop, just like talking and just like.
You had the boombox.
Yeah.
Bill is so old school. He had a boombox with a cassette player, but he would plug a CD Walkman through the tape. Just Velcro it on the top. Yep.
I would be so rich right now if I did not invest all that money into batteries.
Yeah. Yep. The only thing Bill bought back then was batteries and soda. Mm-hmm.
Marlboro Reds.
Yeah. Pepsi, Marlboro Reds, batteries.
Yeah.
All you needed.
Yeah.
Well, I can say just, I don't want to step on your toes, Murph, with a question that Bill asked, but like, I recall it was probably like 2000 and going to the first dartboard show that I went to. And after the show, Joe was like super social and was chatting with a bunch of like us younger kids. I'll say like Nate, Liam, Mark, and we were all like just getting into music, wanting to play and like seeing kids that like were a little bit older than us playing at these shows that we were going to and like had so much fun at was really inspiring. And then to like actually get a chance to chat with these dudes and then being like, hey, you should come hang out. And like we all lived right off of Elm Street. And so it just became, we needed that invite. And I think Joe one night was like, oh, we're going to Elm Street. We hang out at, you know, this spot around this rough area, swing down and like, you know, we all hang out there. And I remember it being like a big group of like us 15-year-olds going to hang out with all the 18 and 19-year-olds on Elm Street, which is weird. Anyway, we showed up and there was a lot of us. And I think it just kind of spread from there because we're like, we would tell our friends like, hey, you should come hang out with all these cool dudes. And like, fucking, we talk about punk music and everyone gets Taco Bell at some point. That wasn't happening yet. But so I recall meeting a lot of the kids that like I know now, like that summer, essentially in 2000 on Elm Street, and seeing a lot of them was awesome all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was always, it would vary night by night. Sometimes it would just be a handful of people. And then sometimes it'd be like, you're like, man, it's like a tour bus, like drop, like a Dufour bus drop, you know, a field trip off or something.
And they all have ADHD and they're all running everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time till the cops show up.
And now like six bands jumped off from that hangout session.
Yeah. You know,
everyone's got practice tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just how it was.
Yeah.
Agreed that I think every person that we've had on talking about the Pittsfield punk scene has kind of said the same thing, like tight-knit community, friends of friends of friends, like people that are still friends now that were friends just starting out, like playing in bands together. The music still lives on. I think people still talk about Illinois Jacket and like hoping to get the non-lossless recording at some point. And like, there's just all this stuff that like continues to like linger on in sort of like the history here. So definitely like hoping we see more reunions and more bands coming back and playing shows and getting to like live out that legacy one more time or maybe more times. but really great to like fill in some of the pieces, hear a little bit more of the stories, especially Pat's lies about minimal effort. glad to finally know the truth behind the names. You gave us a lot of good nuggets tonight, and you told us where to get the best nuggets. Actually, can you tell us right now? Best nuggets, Pittsfield. Go ahead.
Oh boy. Best nuggets?
You seem very confused by the term nuggets.
Yeah, we talking chicken?
Lowbrow chicken item.
Tendies.
Tendies.
All tendies, nuggets.
Hanger.
Yeah.
Which was chameleons.
That's right. I played here.
That was the last show I played, which was at Wander. So.
Shout out to Wander.
I was at both those shows.
Yeah, hell yeah. Dude, that felt like just like a big...
That was great.
It was awesome.
Yep.
Just, man, a lot of happiness, a lot of feelings being there. Yeah. A lot of nostalgia.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. All right, any last questions for Murph? Or Murph, you want to leave us with anything?
I just want to say, man, I love having you on this one. It was just... Like you were like the first person that I went to Elm Street with, and like,
yeah,
I mean, just been like one of my best friends for forever. This is really cool.
I agree. Bill's
crying. Yeah,
I agree. I'll fight you for him, Bill. He's the only one who got invited to my wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate being on. You know.
Big fan, right? Obviously.
Yeah. I gave a few listens here and there.
All right. God damn it. We got to edit that. I listen to every episode.
I listen to every episode.
I wouldn't even listen to every episode. I don't blame him. I mean, I do, but I have to because I edit it. So.
Skip the wrestling ones.
Yeah, skip season one altogether. Anyone listening now, you came on.
And even before Abby, just no.
No, we had some good conversation with Andy. When he used to just,
he
used to just lay back on the couch. Completely informal. He's been laying back on the couch in like a, probably in the same sweater you're wearing now, Andy.
Hell which, yeah.
Thank you for.
Hey, what's that shirt though?
You're covering his cleavage.
Yep.
The 413 podcast. The new Andy, merch.
I thought that was a shower curtain behind you. So I thought that you were in the bathroom the whole time.
Oh no, I'm in the dining room. This is the curtain to my window.
Okay. Yep.
Andy picked that one out. So yeah, it is a shower curtain.
Reuse.
That's right. I got a shower curtain in my basement for my office for one of the walls because I have no walls down there.
Andy's saving the world.
It's the Ramon shower curtain from C Street.
That must have been after me.
Yes, it was.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember that either.
It was hung up in the basement. That's why. And C Street, too.
Oh.
Baby Havoc one.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll catch you again next time. We want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Bye.
Peace. Peeps. Yeah.